From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know.
Back to the show, everyone. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. You are you. We are in Brooklyn, which means this is Stuff They Don't Want You to Know Live.
So we found our way to Brooklyn through a bit of a nightmarish travel scenario. We live in Atlanta, and there's a big, giant travel hub there in the form of Jackson-Hartsfield International Airport. And you may know that there have been some weather concerns that have caused just this, like, domino effect of flight cancellation. So we spent about 18 hours in the airport, and we explored that place from TGI Fridays to Gordon Biersch, and we made some friends along the way, and then finally got here at about 3 a.m. We were a little punchy, and our hotel looks a lot like a David Lynch movie. It's called the Hotel Le Bleu. And when we walked into that place, completely sleep deprived and weird, it was a thing. It was an experience.
Yeah, it's not ironic. The entire hotel is lit with blue lights, and that TGA Fridays was also lit.
Apparently, at 10 a.m., it was super lit.
It was crazy.
Yeah, we heard from a friend. A lot of people are stranded there still. We hope we make it back.
Yeah,
but so Atlanta's known for the airport. It's also known for really bad traffic.
Yeah. So we actually are coming from a city that is in the midst of an emerging conspiracy theory. You may have heard in the news recently, there's an interstate there called I-85. It's sort of one of the arteries of the heart of the city, and part of it collapsed just a few days ago.
Yeah, it's one of the only two ways that you can get into Atlanta, and it's just dead. So everybody's using all these back roads. But the big conspiracy is, how could something like that happen?
The government line, right, is there were some dudes smoking some drugs down there, and obviously quite vigorously, because they seem to have managed to set fire to a giant stockpile of PVC that was being stored underneath the overpass by the Georgia Department of Transportation.
Well, now, to be fair, I don't think any of us have done hard drugs under a bridge, but we did meet after college.
Speak for yourself, buddy.
Okay. Whoa. Learning so much about you guys. But yeah, I mean, on my way to the airport, in fact, my Uber driver was like, yeah, that definitely didn't happen. There's no way. He's like, no. It was the government. It was the government. And I'll tell you why it was the government. Because we in Atlanta, you guys are blessed here with a fantastic public transit system and gets you here, there, and yon. Wonderful. No? Well, okay. Comparatively magical. In Atlanta, ours is like in the shape of a T. Yeah. And it'll get you to like two neighborhoods in the whole city. And then, you know, it's driving the rest of the way. But the theory is, at least as far as this Uber driver was concerned, that the government blew up the bridge to increase ridership on MARTA.
Yep. And you know what I like about that plan is how straightforward it is.
Oh, yeah.
It really is.
It's no frills. That is a no frills conspiracy. I mean, you know.
It's this Ruby. You remember that board game Mousetrap, guys?
Yeah.
It's like on the level of Mousetrap.
That was a game that I never actually understood the rules of or how you won. I just kind of like to mess around with it and do the thing.
Yeah.
You know, but
I don't know if anybody's actually played Mousetrap all the way through.
Where are you?
I didn't think so. No one does it. But this got us thinking about infrastructure and how important it is and how often it's ignored. And we know that infrastructure is a problem in the U.S. overall. And when we think about cities, what we realize is cities are like a massive agglomeration of concrete, metal, and asphalt, but they're almost like a living organism, you know? We've got water, we have electricity, we have sewage systems, communication networks, and ways to pass all of that to people and to businesses. And the thing is, let's be honest, everybody wants to benefit from these structures. We like power, we like clean water, but not many people want it in their neighborhood.
It's NIMBY. NIMBY.
Not in my backyard.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm the resident acronym junkie of our crew, and we're going to have a lot more fun acronyms for you as the show progresses. But the first one is NIMBY, not in my backyard. So the infrastructure of cities keeps them alive, but this sprawling system of systems within systems isn't always the nicest thing to look at. The equipment, it's dangerous, could potentially be considered an eyesore. You know, you don't want it right out in the open so, you know, people can blow it up by smoking drugs. And, you know, so this is why we generally build subways instead of superways or L trains. I guess Chicago has that and MARTA does too. But in general, you know, you want them away from the public eye.
Yeah, like the way they treated the way they treated children in the Victorian era. You know, just put them away, and then a firm handshake, an exchange of surnames at the age of 18.
So, in some cases, it's necessary to place these things in inopportune places, in neighborhoods, right next to where other human beings are trying to exist.
Yeah, and this stuff is peppered throughout major cities, and especially here in New York, there are buildings that are not what they seem. They're facades. They're fake buildings, and they're meant to hide these eyesores from the general public and from everybody who is not in the know. And recently, Noel and I went on an expedition with Matt's support here in New York, and we went across the boroughs, and we tracked down buildings that, in some cases, didn't want to be found.
Tell me about the first one.
So the first one, you do the first one, Ben. That was your favorite.
Oh, okay, the first one, I feel like I'm doing stand-up now. You probably heard this one. So the first one is a brownstone in Brooklyn. And normally, it would look like, if you're just casually passing by, you know, your Uber driver's telling you some conspiracy about the interstate, and you're like, oh, there's another sparsely decorated brownstone.
I can't afford to live there.
And then if you linger, if your gaze lingers, you notice that it doesn't really have a doorknob. It doesn't really have windows that you can see into. Up close, it's a matte black. Because, you see, this brownstone does not contain a living room or a kitchen or a nuclear family with 2.5 kids or, you know, like...
What is the 0.5? Is that a dog?
Maybe it's
like
a dog.
It's a kid on the way.
Oh, it's a kid on the way.
Are you serious?
No.
I've always wondered. Anyone... Talk to us after the show.
All right, we'll do fractions. If anybody is good at sociology, please explain that to us later. The city, the transit authority specifically, owns this building. And if you can get through that weird no doorknob door, what you will find will be a set of stairs and an emergency passageway between the Bowling Green and Borough Hall stations. It connects to the train tunnels underneath because that's where so many transit lines converge and fan out.
Just right there in the middle of other people just living.
And that's not the only one. That's a pretty innocuous one.
Mm-hmm. Can I do my favorite?
Sure.
Yeah.
I think this one's really cool just for historical reasons. It is the Strecker Memorial Laboratory, which is on Roosevelt Island, which I didn't realize but has a fascinating, bizarre history unto itself. It used to be known as Welfare Island because it was home to many of the city's hospitals, institutional buildings, and actually the country's first municipal insane asylum, which was built in the 19th century. And we found numerous accounts that suggest that this place and many other places on the island are haunted.
Is this where I go, woo?
You can. No, I do the theremin.
I feel like There we go. That's what.
That
see,
good?
Yeah, that was great.
It was full theremin.
I
right
thought
there.
That was pretty good.
Yeah, that's pretty convincing. And so, actually, I found out a lot of this stuff from the Bowery Boys, who are performing in this festival in the coming days. I kind of can't remember when their show is, but they're excellent. Yeah. And they have an episode all about the strange horrors of Roosevelt Island. So check that out. What's the deal with Strecker Island? Strecker Labs. It's not Strecker Island.
Oh yeah,
sounds like what is it? The movie with Leonardo DiCaprio? Shutter Island.
Shutter Island.
I'm getting confused. Carry on. Rescue me.
Built in 1892. And it's a fascinating place, as you all know. Funny story, on that expedition, when we went to the southern tip of Roosevelt Island, we had to walk quite a ways with film equipment and stuff. And we were turned away at the gate because Kanye West was holding a secret fashion show.
Always does that, man.
And I was like, you know, at that time I didn't know what his clothing line looked like.
It sort of looks like Star Wars costumes, the people that live in the desert.
Yeah, it's like a that's pretty good.
I feel like somebody wearing one of those costumes may have set fire to the I-85 in Atlanta.
entirely possible.
So not all of these fake buildings are created equally, though, because you may be familiar in Greenwich, there's this subway vent that also has a memorial on it, but it's not very well disguised.
Convincing, shall we say?
No, no.
It's, well, it's like this massive concrete rectangle on its end, and just hung on one corner of it is this, like, phony brick facade with window holes cut out, but the windows just go back through to the concrete that you're already seeing everywhere else, so it's like, did you just give up? Like,
It was like 4:35 on a Friday, and they said, okay, all right. People are just going to be driving by. The last one, the biggest one, the one that I hope you get a chance to see is in Mott Haven. It is a Con Ed station that looks exactly like a block-large condo building, and pretty nice condos, too. A lot of people found out about this by trying to ask how much the rent was.
No, you can't live here.
They would go up and get busted. We almost didn't get there, but luckily, and we promised not to disclose his name, we ran into a guy who worked for Con Ed, was unhappy with his bosses, wanted us out of his hair, and just told us where to go. And I will say, you know, Matt, no, it looks like a nice building, but again, you see the hints, right? No doorknobs, no interior, just a matte black window.
Surrounded by a very intimidating chain link fence atop kind of a fancy looking brick wall, but that's, and then like surveillance cameras.
Yeah, which probably made people think, whoa, these are really nice condos, you know?
Yeah, and it's called a gated community.
Right, right. And the one thing they did have was security. We weren't there for maybe more than 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And a very, very polite man. I knew he was polite because he walked out and his posture was kind of schlubby and he was holding a coffee that was clearly from, like, his house or something. And he walked in and said, you know, you guys, you can't film here. I would hate for something to happen.
I didn't hear that part.
It was a very classy threat. It was a very polite and classy threat. But you can go up there and check it out, because what it actually is a substation, a power substation. And if that is out in the open and it's not hidden behind some sort of plausible facade, then property values will go down.
Yeah.
And this kind of stuff is, you know, I think an open secret for people who live in the neighborhood, you know. But we know these things are in some way necessary, because secrecy is a crucial part of so many situations in our environment. And New York has a lot of secrets. It doesn't just hide subway exits. It doesn't just hide ventilation shafts or power plants. It has much, much larger secrets, figuratively, specifically, and physically in Manhattan.
Just across the river on that island that they call Manhattan, deep inside the triangle below Canal Street.
Tribeca, bring it.
Okay.
Acronyms.
I'm trying to make this super spooky.
I'm really sorry, dude. Excuse me.
No, let's do some, like, sound design. Okay.
There is a most curious concrete building that has several names. 33 Thomas Street. The AT&T Long Lines building.
Oh, sorry, that wasn't a good one.
Was that? Did we go to?
Wait, there are a couple other names. What was the? There's one name that you called it. Noel?
Oh, like you got the Eye of Sauron.
Oh, that's right. Yeah,
that's what you always called it.
That was my joke.
I know.
Yeah, well, you missed it, pal.
It's fine. No, because seriously, it looks like it's like a castle turret, and you can just picture the two tips at the top, just having that eye stretching across, just peering across the skyline of the city, judging your every move.
Yeah,
well,
not
maybe
favorably. Yeah, so what this building actually is, technically, it's called a Carrier Hotel, right? And a Carrier Hotel is also, you know, the fancy name is the Colocation Center. So it's a building where all this data, communications, information goes to one place to be stored. And the thing is, it's common for numerous service providers to share the hotel. So if you see Verizon and AT&T with their fake beef in some sort of commercial, don't be fooled. They're snuggling up together in
the
buildings.
Carrier Hotel.
Yeah, in the Carrier Hotel.
Ugh, you know? Don't talk about what happens there.
Nobody talks about it. They're like the Vegas of media communication. I should have thought that joke out better.
It's okay.
So 33 Thomas Street was designed back in 1974 by an architectural firm called John Carl Wernicke and Associates, because, you know, most of them are probably associates.
Man, your German accent is wonderful.
Did I actually?
You did a viva.
Oh, I did?
Yeah, it's good.
Okay.
Yeah, keep going.
Well, don't tell me, because it's like, you know, when Elmer Fudd walks off a cliff, I can't look down.
Okay.
I just got to keep going.
All right.
So the thing is, though, that he got a really weird design request. They wanted him to build a 20th century fortress. Even the architectural drawings had Project X on them, which I personally find like kind of cartoonish. Yeah. You know?
No,
like Chemical X and the Powerpuff Girls.
Yeah, or like Acme and Wile E. Coyote.
Weapon X.
One day I will get to work on a Project X, and it will be the best day of my life.
I mean, we could change the name of the show.
It's we can like call it anything enough. Can be a Project X.
Okay. I think there are already Project X's. Well, we might have to choose a different letter. But the craziest thing is, they said, we want you to build a building that can withstand an atomic blast and the resulting fallout. So a lot of people don't know what it looks like on the inside, but we can describe what it looks like on the outside first.
Yeah, so it's 550 feet tall. It has no windows and instead has exterior walls of precast concrete panels that are clad with these nice little pink-colored granite accoutrements just to set it off, make it pop.
It's a nice touch.
And and so the building is completely dark, meaning that at night it becomes an enormous shadow in the sky.
Yeah, it's got you know, we're so used to very bright and window-rich skyscrapers, and this one is imposing. It's got some like scary mood lighting going on, and it looks brutal because it's brutalist.
So brutal.
Yeah, brutalist architecture. Who said that? Who knows that?
Mm-hmm.
Good job.
Thank you.
Just like looking at it, it is kind of oppressive. You know, like a lot of those buildings just feel like they're crushing you with the weight and intensity of their design.
Yeah, but it's not necessarily hugging your eyes.
No.
We do know that it has three below ground levels, including a cable vault, but we don't know how many people work there. Here's where we have some weird guesses, all right? So the original designs don't specify, you know, number of employees, but what they do specify is that 1,500 people should be able to live there for, quote, a fortnight?
A fortnight is.
That's a fortnight's time.
That's just weird that they put that in there,
you know?
I mean, no, it would make sense if it was the 30s, but it was like 1974. Who says fortnight?
I feel like if you can include it in any kind of official document, you do.
You know what? Yeah. We should say fortnight more often.
A fortnight's time.
See, that's great. Yeah. You're nailing that.
It's imposing.
So they said it had to be capable of sustaining 1,500 people with food, water, and leisure facilities.
What are we like talking racquetball, like
leisure,
ping pong?
Maybe a pool or like a bowling alley.
Did they have Atari in the 70s? I don't know. No, I don't think so.
Like they'd have to have a lot of Ataris, right? Because this is a lot of people, and it had to be self-sufficient. In an emergency, in the case of an atomic attack, this building had to continue running whatever spooky... Can I curse on this one? Can we beep it out and close?
Sure.
Whatever...
Don't do it!
Whatever kind of spooky is going on in that building.
Oh, that spooky...
It had to be able to do it for a fortnight.
Yeah.
When civilization collapsed, they had 250,000 gallons of fuel just hanging out in the bottom.
Yeah, so the whole point is... This is the Cold War, essentially, at least part of it. And if this is your communications hub and a bomb goes off, you know, just on the other side of the island or somewhere pretty close, this thing has to stay there so you can tell everybody what's going on or, you know, at least contact the relevant authorities.
Right, right. And there's a – do you guys remember that movie, The Panic Room? Does anybody remember that?
Yes.
Did I make that up?
Jodie Foster vehicle early aughts.
Okay, well – I didn't see it,
yes.
But it counts with this thing. So inside this building, there's a secure room that's called the Sensitive Compartmented Information Facility, or check this out, Noel.
What is it, the SCIF?
SCIF.
I'm sorry. Oh.
A SCIF. And
bombed
this,
the acronym.
You got it. There's so many acronyms.
It's changed
a lot. And it records calls and internet data from around the world, and it's sort of a black box. Things go in. They go somewhere else. They eventually come out, but we don't know what happens within there. We do know, however, that it has monitored communications and collected communications from the United Nations, the World Monetary Fund, 38 countries at least, including the ones that the U.S. is ostensibly friends with, like France, Japan, Germany.
Yeah. So here's the thing. We know that someone is listening. But who is it, and why are they doing it?
That's the big question.
And we'll tell you right after a quick word from our sponsor.
Yeah.
We're live. We're back. The question, who is listening? Why are they listening? Spoiler alert, the U.S. government is listening, and they're listening to everyone.
Knew?
I know. I don't think that's that big of a spoiler. I mean, really. We saw it coming.
But we've gotten dinged for, like, spoiling Lost. Like, I accidentally spoiled the last episode of Lost, a show from 10 years ago, 15 at this point.
How far back does it go? Like,
what's the statute of limitations for spoilers?
Is it a spoil?
Okay.
9 years?
Five.
Yeah, okay.
This definitely was beyond.
Because I was like, is it a spoiler to say that Abraham Lincoln gets shot? Like, is there someone who does
what?
Sorry, Matt.
All right.
So we do know that they're monitoring commercial, official, and private communications, and they're aggregating and they're analyzing this data. And there's a program that's known as Fairview where all sorts of communications are siphoned, duplicated, and recorded.
Yeah, this is a program that was started in 1985. There are all kinds of different disclosures that have happened about this. You can look up a 2006 report from a guy named Mark Klein. I would say Google it if you can. It's an entire several-page document where he goes into being in San Francisco and having all of these wires that go into a secret room, and he doesn't know what's going on, but the NSA people sure like that room.
And you guys know how government writing is. It's super dry. The coolest thing about this stuff is they all, whenever they use a code name, it's in all caps, right?
Yeah,
like
yeah.
MK Ultra, you've heard of that.
Even
right?
If it's not an acronym. Because you see this Fairview in all caps. I'm like, is that some sort of convoluted, absurd acronym? No. But it's in all caps, and I find that confusing. I don't like it.
Well, we could give it a shot. The Federal Association – I'm freestyling here. Federal Association Integrating Rearward Valley Integrate. No, yeah, you're right. That's
this
tough.
Is tough.
That's
this
a
is
tough one.
Happen.
That's
it's
a tough one. So we know about this stuff because of some leaks and a great – piece published in November of 2016 in The Intercept. It was able to link the Fairview program to a physical location. Matt, can you guess which one it was?
Oh, let me see. Was it the building we've been talking about the whole time?
Yeah, it was.
Okay.
Spoiler alert. Yeah, it was the building the whole time. A secret government program called Titan Point with an E. Because it's
proper.
Classy.
Very
it's a very
proper.
Classy program.
Yeah.
It's linked to none other than 33 Thomas Street. Yeah. And they found it by analyzing secret travel guides.
Is
which,
that like a Michelin thing?
I thought it was like a Harry Potter thing. Apparently it's real, man.
Oh,
that's
wow.
crazy.
Wow.
Secret travel guides.
Yeah, it's a travel guide that just has protocols for any agent or person who's working with the Fairview program. How you rent a car, like what you don't talk about, what you can talk about, and how if you, you know, breakdown on the side of the road, here are all the things you have to do.
Oh, and what you have to do if you have to stop and take a potty break.
Yep,
which to me is the most endearing part.
And most of it's redacted.
Yeah, we'll never know what those guys do in the bathroom. So that came out weird.
No, I got it. I got what you were putting down.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. So one of these secret travel guides revealed the Titan Points in New York City, and they talked about a partner that owned the building, a partner called Lithium.
Mm.
And Lithium, who oversees the building visits at this mysterious windowless skyscraper, is apparently the NSA's code name for AT&T.
Uh-oh. We probably weren't supposed to know that.
I don't know if they care that we know that, you know, at this point. But
yeah, but now we all know it.
So what this means, what this all these details mean, is that right now, as we are hanging out here in the Bell House, and thanks for having us, we are only 35 minutes away. We did the math. We did the taxi math. We did the taxi math. Only 35 minutes away from one of the most prominent listening stations in this hemisphere. And the information we received about this building, including Snowden leaks, is probably already outdated because things move quickly. So we know that a 2015 change in the law prevented the NSA from collecting bulk telephone information. This does not extend to online activity or your Facebook friends.
To wit, we don't know exactly what this location can do now.
Yeah, we do know that it isn't connected to the civilian internet, because what happens is there are these interception nodes all across the country. And so, you know, Noel here or Matt here will have a conversation online. They're texting each other and spoiling Lost or whatever. And then that'll get collected at this point, and then it'll be duplicated and transferred onto a separate private network, and it'll be piped to a place like Titan Point.
And then probably stored in Utah in one of the data centers, because that's just helpful to have.
That's just how they do.
It's just, you know, it's just good to have stuff, I guess.
Just in case you need it. We have it.
Yeah. So the point is, this is known as an air gap, which makes this building very, very difficult to compromise, right, through some sort of electronic means. However, and I don't know if any of you are on a date tonight and you want to get, like, weird with it while you're waiting for the next show, you can just ride over there and check it out. And you can be like, hey, look at our creepy romance. Let's take a picture in front of this building.
Although per our fake building experience, I would not be surprised if you were very quickly intercepted by some form of security personnel and asked kindly to leave.
They'd be wearing an AT&T suit. It would look very unassuming, and they would ask you if you wanted some service.
And they might tase you.
We're just like, snap the picture and go. You don't want to hang out.
Yeah, for sure.
Move on.
Spoiler alert, they probably won't let you in. And the question is, you know, now that we're talking about this, I don't know about you, Matt, Noel, does this creep you out?
Yes.
Yeah?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
If it creeps you out the way it creeps out Matt and Noel, perhaps you would be interested in joining the upcoming exorcism of the NSA.
Take the creep up a notch.
Take
the creep out.
There's an exorcism here in New York at 33 Thomas Street that's happening on April 15th for some reason.
So this magazine out of Queens, The Quiet American, is going to perform a rite of exorcism on the building at 33 Thomas Street, codenamed Titan Point. And this is from their site, but I'm going to quote it verbatim because it's just so good. Mm-hmm. In the interests of metaphysically purging the edifice of the data it hoards and invoking a less maniacal version of citizen government relations, on April 15th at 12 p.m., a cadre of priests, supplicants, and a volunteer choir, right?
That's, you gotta have that.
You gotta, yeah.
You gotta have that.
Will exercise the malevolent energy coursing through the so-called Long Lines building at 33 Thomas Street. This sacred day falls approximately one day before the rising of Christ and 3 days before tax day.
Oh, that's convenient.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Also, I like the idea of a...
Right.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah, do it. That's the date. That's the date. Don't half-ass it.
What are we going to do after the podcast?
Nobody's here from the Quiet American, right?
Well, they're okay, quiet good. Americans, dude. They're not. They're going to, like, maybe wave.
You're right.
I like the idea of a cadre. Can we be a cadre?
I think you need more than three. You guys want to be in our cadre? Can we have a cadre?
Yes! Oh, whoa! I can't believe that.
Always wanted
a cadre.
It was so easy.
Dude, cadre.
I'm filled with power.
We just cadre'd up.
What are they planning to do, Benjamin?
Yes. So here's specifically what they want to do, just real quick so you get an idea before you get there, you know? All right, so they're going to begin with a prayer for the building's physical materials and invoke the gods that this, quote, architectural fiasco has insulted. They will lay a perimeter of salt around the building to, quote, render ineffective the sinister frequencies it broadcasts.
Now, that's going to be harder than it sounds.
I'm not like a salt doctor, but I don't think it does that.
Like, how much money are you going to spend on salt?
Yeah, so then they'll make sacrifices to the building, like thousands of pages of personal data, bouquets of flowers, and, of course, an ostrich egg.
That's just one. Just one. So does that mean like that people are printing out their Facebook feeds and setting them ablaze?
Yes.
I'm kind of into that because, I mean, I put more into my Facebook feed than I do like almost anything else that I do, which is sad. But I kind of would like to burn it.
Yeah, like Instagram. I mean, I printed out your Facebook feed and burned it before.
What?
Guys, I don't have cable, okay? I'm just trying to do stuff.
Did you film it?
I didn't really. I would never burn your Facebook feed.
Your
MySpace is still up. Not that I stalk you. Oh, everybody probably has a lingering MySpace somewhere.
I do, definitely.
So after they make these sacrifices, their idea is that this will release the banal facts of our lives back into their proper home, the ether, and expel the demons of fear and suspicion from within the temple. This sounds like they're joking, right? Like this is a very tongue-in-cheek, Discordian, satirical.
Yeah, it kind of is.
Like a billionaires for Bush kind of thing, you know?
And it's not the first time something like this has been done. In the 60s, Kenneth Anger, who was like a weirdo experimental filmmaker, led an exorcism of the Pentagon, wherein he and his folks encircled it and tried to levitate it and claimed to have succeeded in levitating it an inch or so.
A few inches.
Yeah.
Big building.
We haven't proved anything about this. We want to find notes. So if there are any internal Pentagon documents about the building floating, please let us know.
If you just happen to have those.
Yeah.
When you showed up here. This has all the makings of a sinister political thriller, right? But it doesn't stop there. You see, this obsessive listening is not restricted to spooky, monolithic buildings with cartoonishly ominous code names.
And we're going to talk about that right after we have another sponsor break.
So we're back. And here's where it gets crazy. There really are extraordinary conspiracies that are hidden all around us, in our neighborhoods, in our homes, in our pockets as well. Recently leaked documents confirm what The Fringe was saying for years now. Your own television, cell phone, and electronic assistant can be remotely activated almost
anytime.
What
about the microwave, like Kellyanne Conway was saying? Is that a thing?
You know, we were talking about this. I think it depends on the microwave.
It's like a smart microwave?
Yeah. It also depends on what you're cooking. You have to have really discerning taste to kind of go under the radar.
Yeah. Okay. Well, do people have internet-connected microwaves
yet?
Well,
I don't know, but they certainly... It should be on the table.
We should get one at the office. Yeah, it should be on the table. Recently, WikiLeaks released some stuff describing what it calls secret spying and hacking tools developed by the CIA and British intelligence. And one hack, which was codenamed, and this is for you, Doctor Who fans, Weeping Angel.
Ugh.
The worst, right?
This is a real thing. Who writes these? I want to have the codename job.
So Weeping Angel is a fake off mode where your TV is just joshing with you and it's actually on. And these smart TVs have cameras, and they can hear you.
Well, they have microphones, too, because you can talk to your remote and tell it stuff and all that.
Yeah.
So this program specifically applies to Samsung televisions, where they will appear to be off but run spyware. It luckily, only before everybody goes home and, like, wrecks all the televisions in your neighborhood.
Do it anyway, though.
No, don't do it.
I mean, no, not somebody else's. Don't do that. That's probably a bad crime.
This only applies to the Samsung televisions from 2012, 2013 with some outdated firmware. In which case, you know, I don't know what your television life is like, but maybe you want a new one anyway.
But does this mean that, like, Samsung colluded with the NSA and was like, hey, let's do this?
Ah, very interesting point, Noel. Very interesting question, because Samsung does have a warning in their terms and agreements.
I'm sure
we all read those, right? So Samsung says, customers should be aware that if your spoken words include personal or other sensitive information...
You select words when you speak. Yeah, gotcha.
Yeah. Or like, poetry slams?
Okay.
I don't know.
That can be very personal.
Anyway, that information will be among the data contained and captured and transmitted to a third party through your use of voice recognition.
Just a third party? A third party?
How is that helpful, Samsung? That's
I don't
so
know.
Shady.
I mean, a third party could be anybody.
I'm a third party.
I like that they are calling it a party. You know, that makes it sound way more fun than it is.
So do any of you guys have a home assistant? Not like a robot butler,
or
but like one
flipping.
Of those. Yeah, Alexa. You got
Alexa?
Okay.
Yeah.
Anybody have a home, a Google Home? Anybody?
Yeah. Anybody have Siri on your iPhone while you're in this room with us right now?
Oh, there's
Go, Siri.
Definitely not in the front.
Activate. Siri.
No.
Oh, good. Yes.
All of you are the best people.
So there were a lot of videos we've seen circulating online, right? A couple went viral where somebody is asking Alexa what they do with audio data in the CIA, right? Mm-hmm. And Alexa doesn't outright answer at the time. And there are people who believe this indicates that Alexa is being purposefully evasive rather than understanding that, you know, AI has limits, because we're kind of... If we're like, oh, Alexa, you're not going to trick me. I see what's going on. We're sort of ascribing human emotions and motivations to something that is, we're anthropomorphizing.
I drew a face on mine.
toothpaste on yours?
I'm kidding. I don't have one either.
But the people who really do believe that this kind of thing is going down, though, they get out the board. They start connecting things up. So this is how it goes. Amazon, the company, is owned by a certain Jeff Bezos. That's the video part where it says, here's where it starts. Then he also owns the Washington Post. And because he has a contract working with the CIA, Alexa very well could be recording all of us, anyone who uses it, and sending it directly to the old CIA.
Yeah, okay, yeah. I see where that maps out, but it's true that for a long time Alexa did keep mum if you asked if you were being recorded, but again, is that an indication of a conspiracy, or were the programmers just not bothering to build a specific response? Was it like a non-player character in a video game where you can only ask certain questions and they can only say certain things?
Possibly.
It's like that one in Skyrim that always took an arrow to the knee repeatedly.
Yeah.
It's kind of like that.
Same issue.
Same thing. Or maybe Alexa's misinterpreting these questions. Like, maybe when you say, are you connected to the CIA, it's looking for a Wi-Fi.
My external hard drive, CIA 1 through whatever I have.
You know. But Alexa knows what the CIA is if you ask Alexa.
Well, the first paragraph of the Wikipedia entry.
True, you're
I appreciate. Alexa, though, has recently been updated. She's a whole new woman now. So if you ask the CIA question, she'll say,
No. I work for Amazon.
Yeah, but she doesn't say why.
Yeah.
Oh wait, and that's also a point with Siri, right? Because it sounds like we're picking on Alexa, but Siri also gives non-answers, things that sound evasive. Like if you ask if she's recording you, she'll say,
"I can't answer that."
I can't answer that, Dave.
Oh God, no!
Siri thinks my name is Dave.
Yeah.
So
Siri thinks my name is Princess because my 8-year-old told her so.
Oh boy!
And I just never bothered to change it because she's smarter than me.
So Google's personal assistant answers if you ask, "Hey Google, are you connected to the CIA?" It says,
"Oh,
wait, hold on. What is it? Where are we at? Yeah, I got to do the voice. Oh, where is it? Hey Google. Oh yeah. It says, I have to admit, I'm not sure.
What?
Ugh.
Oh."
That's the worst one
yet.
You're
not sure? What kind of shady relationship is that? And I've been in some weird ones. The question of connection, again, that seems to be the issue. If the information collected by Google is indeed being like sent out to an intelligence agency, then each individual device is not, you know, likely connected directly to an NSA server. It would make more sense for the data to be collected and split off, and that's the case with AT&T's info at Titan Point.
Yeah, so if you're using it and it's going through one of these big carrier hotels, it doesn't matter if Amazon or Google or Apple is working with the CIA.
And the statistics show that consumers are supporting this. If intelligence agencies are, in fact, if these conspiracy theories are true and there is a massive, sweeping collection of data, then people seem to be on board. According to the 2017 Voice Report from Voice Labs, Amazon Echo and Google Home smart speakers are going to sell more than 24 million units through the end of 2017.
Mm. Yeah, mm-hmm. That means there are going to be a total of 33 million or so in just in living rooms and, I guess, bathrooms. I don't know. Where do you put a assistant besides a living room? Your room?
Yeah. Huh. So here's the kicker. Even if Amazon, Google, and Apple aren't sending this data collected directly to, you know, Uncle Sam and the CIA and stuff, they'll still be able to collect it later, or the private company will be able to keep it as long as it wants. I mean, who reads the terms and agreements? But there's a silver lining here, maybe.
Yeah, it's sort of a creepy silver lining, but have you guys seen that movie, was it Ex Machina?
Yeah.
Is that what it was called?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, anyway, so the sort of like sinister Elon Musk-esque figure in that film who created the AI the film is about did a thing where he kind of did a backroom creepy deal with the government where he turned every cell phone, or no, it wasn't with the government, it was with these giant conglomo telecom companies,
sure,
turned every cell phone in the world into a listening device that then fed his neural network that he was using to create his artificial intelligence. So by virtue of like hearing all of these various human interactions, it could create a more realistic, empathetic copy of a human intelligence in theory.
Yeah. So that was just a movie.
Yeah, that was just a movie.
Yeah. Yep.
But it's really happening. It's not that far from the possibilities. We're talking about neural networks, right? And machine consciousness or AI. We know that chatbots based on human interactions with actual, you know, people have been built before. There was the famous one on Twitter that got super weird.
Yeah, weird is one word for it.
Okay, racist.
Yeah,
okay,
it was
fine.
Racist.
Fine.
Yeah.
It was it's called Tay Tweets. Microsoft built it within 24 hours of going public. Mm. Just based on conversations with people on Twitter, it went bonkers. I think I'm willing to curse on the stage, but I don't think I'm going to read that stuff verbatim.
Mm. Well, and the whole idea is that it only knows what it's being sent, right?
Or right,
what
it's
interacts
being taught.
With.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you're teaching an AI every single online interaction that has ever occurred since 2003, we're probably getting close to something that's going to be intelligent. Well,
what if it doesn't like maybe. Us? What if it hates us? What if it wants to extinguish our entire...
No, it's going to. Yeah.
But that's the other thing, you guys. I don't want to embarrass anybody other than myself. But when I think about the conversations I've had online and the stuff that I've said, my drunken Facebook likes alone are teaching artificial intelligence terrible, terrible things.
Well, we're really good at turning silver linings around pretty quick. So let's go down that path for a second. What if this information that's being stored in these hubs, you know, like your Facebook likes and stuff, what if, like, given a more drastic shift in government than we're seeing right now, I don't know what that's going to look like.
Oh,
it's terrifying. But what if, you know, stuff gets really weird and all of a sudden it becomes illegal to have, you know, liked Bernie Sanders on Facebook and it becomes like an executable offense.
Right.
And all that stuff is stored in perpetuity in these hubs, and then all of a sudden, like, the government can go back and figure it out and put you on a list.
Yeah,
you know?
That's the problem.
It's alarmist a little
bit. You just
bit,
have to get re-educated. It wouldn't be that bad.
Is it that far off the mark, though? I don't know.
Well, that's the problem with the old argument that, if you got nothing to hide, what are you afraid for? Why are you being such a wuss?
Was that like a Rocky voice?
I don't know.
Yeah,
in my head, it's some guy named Derek.
Oh, I like
I
it.
Know.
I like it. Derek seems cool.
Derek seems a little bit aggro, but I think he's got a good point for him.
He's coming around.
Yeah, because if the situation changes and the things that were once, you know, protected by a freedom of speech or freedom of thought are no longer protected, then it applies retroactively. In many ways, this is similar to, like, if you had a tattoo when tattoos were legal, and now all of a sudden somebody is a massive dick about it and tattoos aren't legal, and then you're culpable for that. Ultimately, one of the arguments would be that the only way we can control the flow of our personal information is to avoid using these devices entirely. But guys, I object to that.
Yeah.
I think it's unrealistic. And I think it's time that we consider more and more often the way this stuff leaks. So we've all heard about secondhand smoking, right? There's secondhand privacy as well. So if I ever go that extra 2% into the realm of full lunatic, and I'm like off the grid, I'm like, no Facebook, Matt, no Instagram, Noel, and everybody take my computers. Just from hanging out with these guys, if they have phones, I'm still showing up. Oh, come on, man.
It's like when I used to play Pokemon Go for that week. And we're like at a bar hanging out, and I'm like, oh, dude, hold still. There's a Jigglypuff on your ear, and I'm trying to get it. And then Ben is like, no, you know?
Okay. Yeah, it happens.
I get it, though, man. I get it. But at the same time, I want to be able to catch a Jigglypuff at the bar. So it's cool. I'm okay with all this stuff. And a lot of us are. And like, I know that it's an issue, you know, for many of us. Mm-hmm. Some people, you know, put tape over their phone camera. But I'm kind of the mind, you know, where it's like, it's worth it to me to make the trade-off, to be able to use Facebook, to be able to catch a Jigglypuff. That, like, I'm not that interesting. What are they going to do with my stuff? Well, okay, but then when you look at the big picture, that's where it starts mattering. And maybe I'm a little short-sighted in that respect.
I've got your back, man.
Yeah, man, I appreciate it. School me. What's the big picture?
Okay. all right, so the thing is that you'll hear often that we are facing, as a society, an extinction of privacy. That is not the case, because what we consider privacy historically is a very recent phenomenon. And what is actually happening, I would argue, is that we see an accelerating inequality of privacy. Privacy is becoming one of the most important currencies of the modern age, and it's getting tougher and tougher to access it. So what happens, you know, what happens if the beliefs you expound 10 years ago suddenly come back to haunt you like ghosts? You know, what happens if we live in a world where microwaves and toasters and televisions are listening to every word we say, which is, God, I feel sorry for those guys. It's got to be disappointing, you know?
Yeah, we always joke around that we have an NSA intern named Steve, I think.
Steve!
Yeah, we don't mean to, you know.
If somebody from the NSA is listening to us, it's probably...
They definitely are, dude.
Yeah, it's probably like a freshman who's doing an internship
thing. Poor guy, man.
And he's just like, oh, God, please stop with the jokes.
Yeah, you're not funny.
You guys aren't as funny as you think you are. It happens.
There's
something else here that we should talk about, which is that recent legislation that was, I think, signed by what do you call him?
Lil 24.
Okay, signed by Trump.
No, not 24. 45.
Lil 45?
Lil 45.
I thought you were just being generous.
I'm only good at taxi math.
Okay. All right, so taxi math aside, there's legislation that will pass that's threatening to allow private companies, whomever they are, to not only sell your data without your consent, you know, to advertisers, to insurance companies in a way that might impact your insurance situation. They also are making money off of it. And here's the thing. Here's the, like, as a cheapskate, you don't even get a cut.
Yeah, I know.
You don't even get, like, 10%.
This is one of the most lucrative things you can do now with a company, is collect data and then sell it.
Which brings us to the most important acronym of the evening. Ooh. VPN.
Ooh.
Yes.
What VPN. Is that, Noel?
It's a proxy network.
Proxy, virtual proxy. Yes,
yes. Okay, so what's important?
I know you
then?
Use one. I mean, you use one of the highfalutin paid ones.
Yeah, but I'm sketchy.
But you can get them for free too, and it allows you to reroute your internet traffic, your IP address, in a way where you can't be tracked in the same way that people that don't use them are able to be tracked.
Yeah, so, one more set of an obstacle.
And it's increasingly difficult to be anonymous online, like cartoonishly so. But you can do what you can, and that's all you can do. Boy, that came out pretty tautological,
no,
didn't
no,
it?
It's good.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we're live. But the point is here, if we brought all of this back around, the point on purpose, the point is simple. Whether or not these alarmist conspiracy theories are true, whether or not it's malarkey or the real deal, a fried bologna sandwich or the God's honest truth, no matter what any of us might think about it, the fact remains that there is a windowless skyscraper a half hour away from here, and it's watching you.
And listening.
That's it. That's the part we had written out. I guess we're going to say thank you guys so much
for
sticking around for our show.
Guys are
we
awesome.
Really appreciate it. And thank you to the Bell House. Thank you to Jeremy and AJ for the PodFest and having us over.
Definitely.
Thank you to John for doing security. He's awesome.
All right, guys, awesome. And thanks to the Majority Report. That was fantastic.
Yeah.
Yes.
And thank you most importantly to you guys for supporting podcasts. Thank you.